So far this week, we've learned about cognitive load theory, this model of how the brain works that can be useful for understanding education. In this lesson, we're going to learn about some specific tips and ideas that follow from this to help us be better educators. Before we begin, I'd encourage you to pause this video for a moment and reflect on the basic pieces of cognitive load theory and see what they tell you about what you do as a TA. For example, think about the different kinds of memory. How is your teaching impacted by the small size of working memory or the temporary characteristic of short-term memory? Or think about schemata. How can your teaching be informed by an understanding of these subconscious processes that pre-process information? Or thinking about cognitive load. How can understanding intrinsic load native to the task and the student's ability, extraneous load unrelated, and germane load required to do learning, how does it impact you as a TA? So I encourage you to pause the video for a minute or two, think about this, and then come back. All right. Hopefully that you did that and had a useful exercise there. I'm going to talk about some things that come to me as I think about this. Certainly not all of them, and we'll see some more. We may also have an opportunity to talk about some of these on Discord, or we may set up some other opportunities for us to visit together coming up. First, let's talk about extraneous load. Extraneous load is the enemy. We want our brain to be a balance of intrinsic and germane load. No extraneous load, please. And this then leads to a simple question to ask. Should you be the entertaining TA or should you be the boring TA? Which is better, to entertain or to bore? No. To be popular, it's certainly better to entertain. But moments of reflection will realize both of these are extraneous load. The entertaining TA is distracting from the topic and focusing on themselves. The boring TA is encouraging the student to stop thinking about what's going on at all and to be completely distracted by other things. Neither of these are what we want. We don't want entertaining. We don't want boring. What do we want? The most common word used for this is engaging. Or interesting. And these are just words that effectively mean we are capturing their interest and directing it towards the topic at hand. One of the most effective ways of being engaging is to show your own interest in the topic at hand. Show that you care about what you're teaching. And that will tend to rub off on your students and help them not have as much extraneous load, to take the distractions in the world around them and put them aside. Along the way here, though, don't be distracting, right? Don't wear clothing with distracting messages. Don't do distracting things. Try not to distract your students. You should be helping them learn by engaging their interest and directing it to the topic at hand. Also, as we think about counteracting extraneous load, another source of extraneous load, or effectively so, is stress. Stress or anxiety, there's different ways we can think about it. My favorite working definition of stress is wasting time thinking about how stressed you are. Right? Stress effectively occupies part of your working memory, one of those three slots, thinking about and worrying about your stress. Now, this isn't always technically what's happening. We can also think about how stress hormones tend to drain resources away from your mind and digestion and into your body, try to protect your neck and vital organs and get ready for fight or flight, and thus also reduces your working memory. It's sort of the same effect however you think about it. We want to help reduce stress. Don't stress out your students. Do what you can to reduce stress. This is a complicated topic and far more than we can cover in this course at all. But there's just one tip I'll mention now in addition to things you may already know. Stress tends to cause the body to tense up, to get ready for a sprint or a defense. And because of that, your brain reacts to how your body acts. So one of the most effective ways of combating stress quickly is to unroll your shoulders, expose your neck and vital areas, relax your body, and take slow, deep breaths. And that can cause your body to say, ah, the danger must be gone. My body is acting like everything is safe. Those stress hormones will start to drain away. The cognitive load will start to diminish and you'll be able to go back. There are many other things we could think about here, but this is something that's worth thinking about. in helping students relax, trying to get their stress down. Another thing that is related to this is confidence. Students will often spend portions of their cognitive load worrying about if what they are doing will lead in the right direction. Not doing it, not learning about doing it, but worrying if they chose the right thing to do. And it can be a great benefit for you to provide confidence. If you just say, trust me, do this and you will learn and get, and you'll end up where you need to be. Right? Don't tell them their approach is right or wrong, because then you'll become this 20 questions, let me guess a dozen approaches until you tell me the best one. But provide that confidence that what they're doing will help them learn and that you will be there for them when they finish that to move on with the next thing. This can help also reduce that extraneous load. So all of these are related to reducing extraneous load. But we also need to worry about managing intrinsic load. How do we know if intrinsic load gets too big, and what should we do if it does? First, let's talk about how we recognize if it's too big. Cognitive overload. Cognitive overload occurs when the task at hand would require more working memory than we have available. So it needs 4 ideas and we have only 3, or something along those lines. Cognitive overload is a fairly common thing when people are learning. And because your conscious mind is entirely engaged with the cognitive overload, your subconscious has to pick the reaction. There are 3 basic reactions to cognitive overload that are commonly seen as people get into this overload situation. The first one is an escape. When you ask your brain to do something it can't do, it feels pain, it realizes it's impossible, and it will self-destruct. Sometimes this would look like just sort of staring dumbly and doing nothing. Sometimes it'll be self-distracting with some sort of digital device or the like. Sometimes it'll be engaging in off-topic conversations. But this escape mechanism is a natural defensive reaction of your brain saying, I can't do what you asked me to do. I'll hurt myself if I try. I'm not going to try. Now, this can also be a sign of a student that's trying to express that they don't like what's going on. And we can talk some more about that. We talk about dealing with various kinds of students. But this is one result of cognitive overload. The next one we should talk about is regressing. Those schemata that we develop in our brain, their basic job is to take a complicated world and simplify it for us. To take all of the things we see and tell us, ah, oh, those are words and here is their meaning and here is what I am seeing. And they get better at this the more they get used and developed. The more germane load we apply to them, the better they get at that job. This means that the things we learned recently tend to have sort of fuzzy schema. So the most recent topic schema isn't very good at reducing the world. And so when I'm experiencing cognitive overload, one way to make the world simpler is to regress to older, better established, but less accurate schema that can shrink the world more. And so sometimes what you will see when people engage in cognitive overload is it'll appear they have forgotten what you know they knew last time you worked with them. Yesterday they could do this fine. Today they seem to be having trouble. This might be their cognitive overload reacting to this regression. It might also be that it was never in their long-term memory, only their short-term memory, but this can be a result of cognitive overload as well. So sometimes they'll try to escape, sometimes they'll regress, and sometimes they will become rude. Most people use a portion of their working memory at all times to pay attention to the world around them, the people in it, to guess what they're thinking and try to pick appropriate reactions to them instead. And sometimes if you're just a little bit of cognitive overload, your brain will decide to jettison some of those social thoughts and focus only on the task at hand, which will result in various forms of rudeness, of meanness, of shortness, of poor expression. Okay? All of these can be signs of cognitive overload. And if you see any of them, we're already in a pretty bad situation. These all suggest, assuming they're coming from cognitive overload, that the intrinsic load is not only removing the germane load, but is overflowing. And we need to dramatically reduce it to make room for that germane load, that learning that is the job of what we are doing. So these are various ways we can recognize cognitive overload. What should we do when we see it? Well, some things like removing stress and confidence might make more space. Okay? But in general, what we want to try to do is simplify the task, give them a smaller task. Now, almost everybody's initial instinct when there's a big task at hand and you want to make it easier for somebody without doing the whole thing is to say, ah, here is the next thing you need to do. Let me give you the next step so that you can keep going. The problem with this behavior is actually two problems. One problem is it didn't make the task much smaller. So it's likely they're still in a state of cognitive overload once they have done the first thing you said. And the second is that the next TA that comes along is very likely to say, oh, you've made some good progress. Let me just tell you that next step that seems to be stumping you. And the next TA will do the same. And the end result is it may actually all get done by TAs without the student learning anything. A far better approach is to take that big task and try to chop it into subtasks. Say, all right, you need to build this program. That program has some parts. You will need to figure out how to read an input file. I realize saying just read the input file out of context doesn't feel like it belongs, but take my confidence. It will get you the right place, and it's small enough you can handle it. Try to figure out how to do this subtask first. It's far more effective for their learning to show them how to split the task up, to express confidence the other parts will be handled and set them on the first part, rather than telling them how to do part of the problem. It'll make the task much smaller, give them more opportunities to learn. This is an important thing to think about as you're going along. Okay, so we want to manage extraneous load by being engaging, not entertaining and boring, by reducing stress, by magnifying confidence. We want to recognize cognitive load by seeing signs of escapism, regression, and rudeness. We want to manage it by dividing tasks into pieces. There's a handful of other things that we can also learn from cognitive load that are useful for us as TAs. One of them has to do with memory here. Short-term memory tends to get tossed out. It tends to go into the garbage can fairly often to make room for new things. And how does the brain decide what gets jettisoned and what gets kept? A significant part of that is a measure, and the brain does an informal measure of how important this is, how likely it is to be useful again. And therefore, the more often something can go back and forth from short-term to working memory, the more likely it is to stay and get committed to long-term memory. This leads to two ideas. Review. Review what people are doing. When they've finished a task, review what they've done. This can help build their confidence. It can help reinforce how things work. It can help make it more likely to make it into long-term memory, to build new schemata. And the other thing is use paper or boards or the like. Use their eyes as an extension of their working memory. By keeping everything in front of you, part of my goal is that you will have the ability to glance at the screen and remember all of the things we've talked about, to go to the right place and use these as triggers to help that working memory find the short-term memory again. Use these techniques. Review what you teach. Put things visually in front of the student where they can refer to them again and again. Technically, it doesn't need to be visual. There are other ways of making it accessible, but this is a useful thing to do. And the last thing we should talk about from these topics is expert blind spot. Compared to your students, you're an expert in the topics of the course. That's why we hired you, and it's a natural result of you having already taken the course. What this means is you have schemata that help you do the task without thinking. You aren't doing the same thing they are doing cognitively. They are doing it in their working memory. You're doing it mostly in your schemata with some working memory support. This means that you can't, by introspection, see how they think. You're not thinking like them. You can't think like them because your schemata simplify the task for you. And back when you did think like them, your brain was full. Back when you were thinking like them, you were full of intrinsic and germane load, and you didn't have some sort of metacognition extra. You didn't have some extra portion of your brain watching what you're doing and learning how you were thinking. So you are now blind to how they worked because you're an expert, and back then you were blind to how you were working because you were busy. And this means that nobody knows how students work except people that study students. You don't recall it, you aren't experiencing it, you have to study it to understand it. Therefore, you should query your students. You should ask them questions. You should guess what you think they might be struggling with, but you should always make sure you have the right confusion before you try to answer it. Trying to answer what you think is their confusion when their confusion is really something else is extraneous load and adds stress because it suggests a lack of confidence. It has a problem all the way across the board. Before you answer, ask. Find out what it is they're struggling with. Verify that you understand the confusion. And then consider how you can divide it apart or how you can help them understand more fully the topic. With these techniques, querying them to help avoid expert blind spot, reviewing what you do, writing things out visually before them to extend their memory, expressing confidence, reducing stress, trying to focus their engagement on the topic at hand, recognizing signs of cognitive overload, and responding by dividing the task in half or into smaller pieces instead of doing part of it for them can help you be an effective TA.